Good morning. I'd like to make an announcement. We are currently having some sound system problems, and we cannot get started until they are corrected. We hope to have them corrected shortly, and as soon as we do, we'll start the Planning Commission hearing.
Testing. 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 Okay, testing, testing.
Obispo County Planning Commission hearing of May the 12th. Lona, could we please have a roll call?
Commissioner Rose?
Here.
Commissioner Christie?
Here.
Commissioner Malskow?
Here.
Commissioner Rappa?
Here.
Chairperson Liberto Blanc?
Here. At this point, please join me in a flag salute. Join all of us in a flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands.
I want to welcome everybody to our Planning Commission meeting today, and just as a point of reference, we ask that anyone who wishes to speak today on any item to please fill out a request to speak form, and the white forms are in the back of the room. And after you complete the form, please bring those forward and give them to the Planning Commission Secretary. At this item on the agenda, we have the public comment period. This is an opportunity for people to speak on any item that is not on the agenda. And I do have one request to speak form at this point, and that's Eric Greening.
Good morning. Yes, this time it's not going to be a bunch of questions that have to be answered in planning staff updates. Did I give my name?
No, you didn't.
I am Eric Greening. This is not going to be a running series of questions. It's simply going to be a suggestion, which may or may not be discussed in planning staff updates. You already have created for yourselves quite a list of future study sessions, and I would simply like to suggest another topic, and that is to invite environmental health and or whoever else can be informative on the topic to look at what is the current inventory county-wide of septic tanks, at what rate are new homes and businesses being built that depend on septic tanks, and what is their rate of either needing to be pumped out or failing completely. One thing I've observed about recent development patterns is more and more of it is occurring in places where septic tanks are the only option. We seem to be going the opposite direction from smart growth. And of course, when the county, in answering Sacramento's numbers, actually took on an additional 2,000 units, in that we have to be prepared for the contents of 4,700 septic tanks from Los Osos, if that project moves on the anticipated schedule, to be taken somewhere within a two-year period, which may be sooner rather than later. And do we have excess capacity to deal with that? Even the Santa Barbara treatment plant for the whole city can only take 6,000 cubic feet of septic a day, the contents of maybe 6 to 10 septic tanks. And so how can we handle this in the future, this growing proliferation? I see a crunch coming, and I think you should have a study session. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Any questions for Eric? Is there anybody else that would like to speak on any issue that is not on the agenda today? Please come forward. Okay, seeing no one coming forward, we will now go on to our next item on the agenda, which is planning staff update. Warren, do you have any updates?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. Two things. One is to remind you that we're having our annual Community Advisory Council training workshop on Saturday. Your commissioners are invited as individuals, and in fact, one of you, Mr. Rose, is one of the featured speakers. This is geared toward the Advisory Council members. We provide them with written materials, but we'll be more than happy to have other informed observers if they would like to participate. The other update is, I'm presuming you want me to fashion some form of response to Eric's suggestion, although he promised that we wouldn't need to respond. And I can just simply say, we'll discuss it with Environmental Health and get back to you.
Okay. Any questions for staff? Any comments from the commissioners?
I had one. Back to study sessions, one of the things we did when we approved a wind generator, that there was some controversy among the neighbors, and there was some state law that may or may not have conflicted with our rules, and our rules didn't really conform to the state law. We told ourselves that we would get back to that, and we never did. So maybe we shouldn't get back to that.
On wind generation?
Right.
You're absolutely correct. Commissioner Rose, I do remember that, and we had planned to get back to you on that. I'm not sure exactly why we haven't, probably because we have a few other things to do, and maybe it just fell through the cracks. We should have added it to the list of study session topics that we developed before. I'll check with the staff that was working on that and report back to you at the next meeting.
Okay. Commissioner Christie?
Mr. Hogue, I had an opportunity to talk to a member of the Ag Liaison Committee over the weekend and asked her if they'd had a chance to review the any draft recommendations on the board's direction to come up with standards for ag-to-ag transfers in the TDC program. And she said that the Ag Liaison Board had not been briefed or approached on reviewing any of those draft recommendations. And so I was just wondering, again, where that might be on the department's list of or timeline in terms of when those recommendations might be public?
If your commission will recall, I actually discussed that at your last meeting as part of the your item on sending a letter to the board recommending changes to the TDC program. We do have an authorized amendment for developing further criteria for ag receiver sites. We're in the process of researching what other jurisdictions do and developing a draft proposal, and we expect to have that available for public review in early summer. Our first stop will be the Ag Liaison Board. It will also be made available to the community advisory councils as well and any other interested party.
Any other commissioners have questions for staff or comments? Okay. Warren, any other updates from staff?
Can't think of any now.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we have no consent agenda items on today, so we can go directly into our hearing items. And our first hearing item is a continued item. Lona, can you please introduce the first hearing item?
Hearing number one is a continued hearing from 42805 to consider a request by Bonaire Investments and Sprint PCS for a development plan and coastal development permit to allow the construction and operation of an unmanned wireless telecommunications facility in the community of Los Osos, office and professional land use category, Estero Planning Area, Supervisorial District 2, County File Number DRC 2004-00008, Marsha Lee, Project Manager.
Marsha Lee, Staff Planner. Good morning, members of the Commission.
Marsha, you're not coming through on that mic. Can
Hello?
You?
Now is it?
I think you're going to have to get it real close.
Now?
Yes.
Yes.
Staff. Okay, seeing no questions for staff. Oh, Commissioner Christie?
I actually have a question for Mr. Orton. And just for clarification, Mr. Orton, there had been some discussion at the last meeting about us being preempted from denying the project based on its public health implications, that there had been a Supreme Court case regarding that. But I just want to clarify with you whether or not we are able, have the discretion to deny the project based on its relative inconsistencies with LCP policies in the general plan.
The area in which you're preempted is the RMF area, and aesthetics and other items is something that's within your authority.
And that's what the ordinance says in order to make those, if we make a determination for denial, that we need to make written findings and based on evidence in the record, et cetera.
Yeah, that's a standard requirement.
Okay.
Also of our procedures here.
Thank right. you for that clarification.
Okay, any other questions for staff before we open the public hearing? Okay, no questions for staff. We'll now open the public hearing and ask the applicant to come forward.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Tricia Knight, and I'm representing Sprint PCS this morning. I do have some information that I'd like to pass out for you and briefly review. I just wanted to briefly touch on a few of the issues that were discussed during the last hearing. One of the things that I wanted to show you that you'll be looking at on top are pictures of existing structures and flagpoles that we have built throughout the county that have been done successfully. The first picture you're looking at, just to show you a comparison, though, is a 25-inch diameter flagpole at the Letitia Vineyards site, if you've ever driven by that. We are 10 inches smaller than that. The very last picture on the second page is a facility that's a 12-inch diameter at the Elks Lodge in downtown San Luis Obispo, and so we are 2 inches larger than that, just to give you a little bit of perspective. Another issue that was brought up during the last meeting, if you go to your Exhibit B, is the coverage area that we are trying to fulfill here. If you look on the first Exhibit B page, you'll see the circle. That is what we call the search ring. That's the area trying to be covered. You can then see the coverage holes, which are downtown Los Osos and the first part of Los Osos Valley Road as it enters Los Osos. If you go to your next page, Exhibit C, you'll see where the site is, and that is as if it was turned on. You can see that it does meet the coverage objectives, which are green is the best color, all other colors being less than good. If you go to Exhibit D, if you look to the south of where our proposed facility is, you can see the BOEM and Verizon facilities. There was some question last time as to why we could not locate out of Los Osos. One of the reasons is that the carriers that are locating there are Verizon and I believe it's Cellular One, which operate in the 800 megahertz frequency range. What that means is their wavelengths are longer, they're able to travel further, and they need less sites to cover a larger area. Sprint is PCS, which is 1900 megahertz, which is a very short wavelength. So it takes more sites, and we need to be closer to the population to be covered. And as you can see with the BOEM and Verizon facilities, if we were to locate there, we would not be able to reach the coverage objectives of Los Osos Valley Road or downtown Los Osos. So I just wanted to indicate that was one of the big issues last time was that, well, why can't you just go where everyone else is? And I think the maps really do show the reasons why we can't do that. And last but not least, I just wanted to just give a little brief summary of our conformance with the local coastal plan. I can go through it if you like, or I just highlighted some of the conformance that we have with this particular project.
I think it would be helpful for me, at least, for
Absolutely.
You to go through it.
The first one is part of the general plan, which indicates that protection of the county's scenic environment also encourages the growth of recreation and tourist industries, which are important to the local economy. Even though, and one of the statements that was made last time was that a lot of people in Los Osos don't have Sprint PCS coverage, and the reason is because there's no facility there. So the tourist and recreation industry, cell phone coverage is a key part of that, especially for emergency services. Going down to the local coastal plan policies 30251, it asks that any new development be visually compatible with the character of the surrounding area. We had indicated last meeting that saying, well, this is not a flagpole. Well, if you walk up and touch it, it's metal like a flagpole. You can actually put a flag up on top of it. For all intents and purposes, it is a flagpole. And a flagpole is compatible with a office park. If you look at the base of this flagpole, the 12-inch flagpole, you'll see that the equipment which is used to power the facility is immediately at the base of the flagpole. So we are able to use very small cables. I forgot what size they are, very small cables to go up. Therefore, the diameter of the flagpole can be very small. In order to fully screen the equipment at the Bonaire facility, we are actually locating in the basement of the, so underground, basically. So it has to come up through, it has to go approximately 150 feet. So the longer that we go, the larger cable we have to use. So if we were able to locate, like the Elks Lodge facility, we would be able to locate right next to it. We'd be able to use the smaller cable, but that's not available in this particular situation.
I probably shouldn't do this, but I'm going to argue with you, or maybe I'll argue with your engineer.
Okay.
I understand why the equipment cabinet is located where it is, mm-hmm. but certainly you can put some inline amplifier halfway down the coax. I understand what you're saying, that okay. You have less loss with the larger cable or coax or waveguide or whatever you're using. Why can't you put a little inline amplifier there?
I'm going to actually defer that to my RF engineer.
Hi. Morning. Actually, because...
State your name, please.
My name is Gaurav Kumar, and I work for Sprint PCS, and I'm an RF engineer. And the answer to your question is, like, for 0 to 100 feet, we use 7, 8 inches coax. For 0 to 100, we use 7, 8 inches coax. From 100 to 180, we use inch and a quarter. And then from 180 to 250, we use inch and 5x8, and anything above that, we use like 2.25 inch coax cables. The reason why we cannot use the amplifier is because of the losses associated with the connectors and the amplifier itself. By the time the signal gets to the amplifier, it depreciates in value.
Wait a minute. The signal is going to, I presume you're talking about the incoming signal.
Yeah, the signal coming from the antenna and going vice versa, both.
Right, so we're talking about the incoming signal, not the signal going out.
You're talking about both the signals.
Both signals, okay. I still don't understand why you can't put a little inline amplifier in there.
Because of the losses associated with the connectors. Every time you put a connector, you have a 3 dB loss.
Okay, so you increase your gain of the amplifier by 3 dB.
And then there's a chip delay involved with the signal, too.
A what delay?
Chip delay. Because this is CDMA, so the technology is based on the chips. And they're called PNs, pilot.
What's the smallest...
The smallest is...
What's the smallest flagpole in use anywhere?
12 5 by 8 inches diameter.
12 inches in diameter. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a couple of questions for Ralph.
Oh, okay.
The part of your reason for the inability to share with other cell providers is the frequency channel that you're assigned. Is that correct?
Sprint operates in 1900 megahertz. So the formula for wavelength is lambda is the wavelength, which is in meters. Lambda is equal to speed of light divided by the frequency. So the higher you go in the frequency, the shorter will be the wavelength.
Okay. Is this the only frequency that's available to you?
That's allotted by FCC.
Do you have the opportunity to request a different frequency?
No, we don't.
So you're assigned one? And
exactly. All the carriers are assigned different frequencies, and they are supposed to operate only in their licensed band.
Okay. Another question is that over the years we've seen many, many utilities, and I think phone is still cell phone, whatever, is still considered, move in a way that they are less obtrusive and more compatible. They've gone to undergrounding. They've done all kinds of things. What do you, can you share with me the technological advances that cell phones can look forward to? Cell phone providers.
I'm afraid I did not get the question.
Is there a way that you will, in the future, be able to not have these towers, not have above ground facilities?
Probably not, unless we go satellite phones, unless everyone uses satellite phones.
Unless you do what, sir?
Unless you use satellite phones. So the cell phones talk to the satellites. They receive and transmit signal to the satellite.
Also says.
My question is, maybe goes to that word first, because in looking at this, I can anticipate that while the coverage will be improved, it won't be seamless or perfect.
Correct.
And can you envision that Sprint PCS may be back in some period of time in the future needing another cell phone tower somewhere else in downtown Los Osos to improve the coverage in other areas of town?
Possibly. We, as you may or may not know, we have pursued many sites in Los Osos. We've looked at existing water tanks. We've done an alternative site analysis showing the other locations that we have looked. This is the best facility being in the context that it is and incompatible with the surrounding area. In the future, it's hard to say. I don't know exactly when Sprint will receive funding for additional sites in this area. I would imagine that their end goal would be to have seamless coverage in Los Osos, but as you know, any new facilities would have to go through the advisory committee as well as this commission.
And I know it's not your job to do your competitors' analysis for
right.
them, but do you have any knowledge of the existing companies that have cell phone towers in the outlying areas that cover Los Osos? Is what their coverage of downtown Los Osos is like in terms of how much green coverage they have versus how much yellow and red coverage they have?
I actually did speak to the Verizon RF engineer last week, and he indicated they receive good coverage because of the frequency that they are currently operating at. However, they do receive complaints from a lot of people who work from their homes in Los Osos that when they're standing in their homes, they can't get coverage. And that's due to obviously the frequency having to travel so far into Los Osos to cover them. Another thing is Verizon has a substantial number of customers, and there's capacity issues that are involved with that. So eventually they not any time this year that he had made clear, but eventually they will probably need coverage into Los Osos as well, into the downtown area.
Which would mean another downtown tower for Verizon.
You know what? I'm not going to speculate. I can't really say.
Sure. Fair enough. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Yeah. Back to this, the size of the coaxes. You're saying that you have to use a 14-inch tower because the equipment is not at the base of the flagpole.
Because of the size of the cables that have to go up the middle of the flagpole to connect the equipment to the antennas.
So if you had your equipment at the base of the flagpole, you could have a 12-inch tower.
Correct.
So because of the additional 19 feet, you're going to require that larger cables?
It actually has to come from the basement. So the 19 feet is actually where it comes out, and we'll be trenching from where it comes out of the basement to the flagpole is 19 feet, but it has to come from a substantial distance on the second floor of the building, or actually on the subfloor.
It says, level. According to the conditions of approval, the equipment is within the basement of an existing building.
That's correct.
And then we're going to have a 19-foot trench, so that leads me to believe that we don't care where you put the thing in the basement. Seems to me you could have it 20 feet away, the last amplifier.
There's a very, as you know, for parking and various uses that the property owner has for that building, there is a specific area that he has asked us to contain our equipment. The flagpole is actually in somewhat of a pass-through, a general public area. The equipment would be awkward and also probably in the way. And also visually, there would be a visual aspect to it as well.
Okay, so far I haven't heard any convincing argument that tells me that this can't be a 12-inch diameter pole.
So with the loss that we would be getting from the gain and receive from the amplifiers, as well as the fact that we don't want the equipment to be visually intrusive?
The equipment's going to be in the basement.
Correct.
And it looks to me like you have two choices, the basement or the base of the flagpole. And I understand the aesthetic reasons why I didn't want it at the base of the flagpole, although certainly you could put it underneath the pavement and no one would ever know it was there. But so we're putting it 19 feet away and we have to make it larger? I'm not buying it.
It's 150 feet away. It's 19 feet that is being trenched from where the cable comes out from the basement level to the flagpole.
You can have your last amplifier on the other side of the basement wall.
I'm going to let Gaurav answer that question a little more.
Actually, we have like three antennas for this side, one facing north, one facing west, and the third one facing east. So we have six cables to run. And because of the distance, because of the cable losses associated, the more farther away we go, the bigger size of the coax we have to use.
I understand all that argument. But I'm not buying it. I understand you need the larger cables. I do really, in fact, understand that. But I see no reason in the world why this last amplifier can't be in the basement 20 feet away from the flagpole.
Because of the cable losses. Because of the connector losses, cable loss.
But you're telling me you're going to have it on the second floor. Obviously, you're going to have quite a bit of losses from the second floor down to the basement.
Sure. We barely got enough open space to put in enough parking and the buildings that are currently there. The location of the flagpole, where it's going to be located, has already been developed. It's got a lot of components around it as far as electrical, telephone, and other structures that are around that particular location. And to go back and try to redesign something at the base of this flagpole that would accommodate the equipment that Sprint would need would not work at all because of the actual size of the location of this flagpole itself. You know, there's a possibility that we could probably relocate the flagpole or flagpoles in front of the building as we were hoping to do originally and come up with something like that. But we are, again, trying to come up with something here that would be aesthetically pleasing to the site and beneficial to the community. And the size of the equipment room that they're looking to place their equipment in the basement itself is fairly substantial. It's about 120 square feet that they're going to be using to put their equipment down in there. So I would say that at this particular point, to try to redesign the site to accommodate the equipment at the base of the flagpole would be almost impossible, just because of the fact of the actual way the actual property was designed. It's and the components that are pretty much around there at this particular level.
What's in the basement, next to where this trench meets up with the flagpole? I'm not quibbling about where the flagpole is. I presume that aesthetically you've placed the flagpole in the most pleasing position.
Correct.
So I'm not suggesting moving that. But this thing says, the conditions say there's going to be a 19-foot trench extends from the equipment inside the basement of the building to the flagpole, which leads me to believe that the equipment could be 20 feet away from the flagpole.
Well, I would have to bring you out to the site to, or you know, demonstrate exactly where it is. But there would be physically no way to do that at this particular level. And if that was a an option, I would concur with your suggestion. But with the way its situation is now, I believe the only place that we could possibly locate the equipment would be on the other side of where the flagpole is located, and that would be down probably a 20-foot, maybe an 8 to 10-foot embankment, which is basically within an oak grove, which has been now dedicated to the county, which we can't really develop it within. So there's just a lot of limitations at this particular level, and without any visual, you know, components, it would be hard for me to demonstrate.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm just thinking the basement. I got a mental picture of a basement, which is an empty, you know, structure that seems to me that cabinets could go down there anywhere.
Well, that's why we designed the only reason we designed the basement on this particular building is to accommodate storage and to possibly accommodate the equipment for Sprint or any other carrier that might need to go into that particular area.
Commissioner Rose, may I clarify something? I just want to make sure, do you have any objections to the utility trenching being approximately 19-foot trench? Did I hear that you have concerns about that, or is that you understand that that's a condition?
That's a condition?
Yes.
Do I have any problem with that? No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
Excuse me.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. I have a question, maybe possibly for Ms. Knight, and I just wanted to look and get some clarifications on some of the pictures. On the first picture on A, and this is the existing 50-foot flagpole at the vineyard.
Correct.
And on this, is this just one carrier?
That is one carrier.
That's
yes.
One carrier. And this is in a vineyard, so it's not in the middle of a city or a community. This is in the middle of a...
That's correct. You've driven by Letitia Vineyards up at the tasting room.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's one carrier, 50-foot flagpole.
Correct.
And then the second picture that you have is an existing 60-foot flagpole.
18-inch diameter.
Right, 18. Mm-hmm. And this is Orcutt at a mm-hmm. Hearst dealership. And what's the surrounding area?
Surrounding, if you're heading down 135 right before you get to the exit for the Highway 1 towards Lompoc. So if you're looking off that direction, it's generally commercial, but there are subdivisions behind this Hertz rental.
Okay, and is this one carrier?
This is one carrier, correct.
One carrier, okay. Are there any plans in either one of these to put more than one carrier?
No, not at this time.
There isn't. Okay. And then on the next page, same question.
It's the same flagpole that you were just looking at. It's just a little bit of a further view, so you could have a little bit of context there.
Okay, and then the 66-foot flagpole in San Luis Obispo at the Elks Lodge?
Correct.
Is that one carrier?
That is one carrier.
Okay. And the surrounding uses on that?
Perhaps to expedite our public, right. Our input a little bit.
Right. And we did receive testimony last time, so we would request that. And we did hear your testimony, so if you have new information, that'd be great, or if you want to summarize what you said last time. Is Julie here? If Julie's not here, we'll call her when she comes back. Lee Caulfield? Okay, and Lee just submitted a petition to us with 81 signatures. I will enter into the record.
What, can you read what the petition
says? The petition says, are you going to read this, Lee?
It's pretty much covered in here, but if you want to go ahead and read it.
Okay, fine. This is the petition. It says those signing this petition are opposed to the construction of the proposed Sprint cell phone tower in the community of Los Osos, and then it goes on, but that's pretty much people are opposed to it.
Right.
Okay.
I'm nervous again. My name is Lee Andrea Caulfield, and I live in Los Osos. And I have different information this time. I request you deny the proposed cell phone tower and place a moratorium on future towers in the county until the county has revised its guidelines to incorporate the appellate court and Supreme Court rulings which permit municipalities to deny such towers based on community need. Is this okay? Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
And please see my presentation that's dated 4/26/05, citing these rulings. In addition, please review Metro PCS versus the City and County of San Francisco Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I have submitted a petition signed by approximately 84 residents who object to the construction of this tower. The community does not want or need another cell phone tower. It is incompatible with the neighborhood. We already have two cell phone towers off Clark Valley Road with five cell phone providers co-located on these towers, which provide sufficient coverage to our community. The Sprint tower would be substantially more intrusive than the other cell phone sites. It would be the first tower in the community, is close to schools, residences, and daycare centers, thus is in an unsuitable and inappropriate location. The staff report neglects to mention the proximity of the existing two cell phone towers. It seems clear the proposed Sprint tower is neither necessary nor desirable. Contrary to the photographs in the staff report, the tower will be entirely visible from Los Osos Valley Road and will have a negative visual impact. I respectfully suggest the commissioners visit the site themselves with a temporary pole in place, while keeping in mind the pole will be much wider than the temporary pole. According to the Sprint representative, the tower will be permitted to co-locate additional providers, which will increase the height and the width of the tower and will have an even greater negative visual impact. I dispute the report conclusion that this tower will be a complementary feature of the commercial building, and that's a quote, page 3-3. I dispute the findings in Exhibit A3-6, which state the tower will have no detrimental effects on the health, welfare, and safety of the community. Please note the legal rulings have not excluded considerations of health, but only that decisions to deny not be based on health issues alone. That's very important. The CSD denied this tower in another location approximately July 2004, at least that's the document signed, the date of the document signed in the staff report, based on public outcry, and that's a quote. See page 323. Another location was also denied for the same reason. It is clear the community does not want or need this tower. There needs to be a consistent policy on how projects are presented in the community, and there needs to be mechanisms whereby the public is given sufficient and timely notice of these proposed projects. The community was unaware of this current proposal. It was, or it should have been known by the planning department, that the community does not want or need this tower. Please abide by community desires and deny this tower. I think you do have sufficient grounds to do that. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? No questions. Next person, I have Julie Tacker.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker. I believe you all received a correspondence from me earlier this week. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. Please deny this precedent-setting project. It sounds like from this Sprint representative today that there's going to be more need or more desire to have more towers in Los Osos. The neighbors directly affected by this project do object. Some were here 2 weeks ago before your commission. It doesn't sound like you can deny this project on. I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions for Julie? Okay, no questions. Thank you, Julie. Next person I have is Carol Maurer.
Carol Maurer, Los Osos, and I'm the chairperson of the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. And I'd like to, I have created a summary of all of the LOCAC votes on this issue. I did not speak to all of them last time, and I have one for you, and I'm going to speak to that.
Great. Thank you.
The first time that this project came before LOCAC was on September 3rd in 2004. At that time, there were only 7 board members present at the meeting. There should have been 11 total. There was one vacancy, and 3 persons were absent at that meeting. Tricia Knight did present the project at that time. There were a lot of questions about the project. There had been some confusion about who was responsible for noticing this item for that meeting. And it probably should have been LOCAC. We didn't do it. There was very few people present from the community. But we did have a pretty lengthy discussion on it. And at that time, we moved to, there was a motion to recommend approval of the project with certain provisions. And I believe those provisions were presented to you before. That motion that night on September carried by a 5-2 vote of the 7 people present. In February 24th, 2005, this project came back to Los Osos Community Advisory Council because there had been a change in the project. Now, it was our understanding that it actually went from a 60-foot high tower, 12 inches, to a 50-foot, 14-inch. What I hear today is that it was actually 60-16 and went down to 50-14. But in any event, there was at that time there was some question about the project. In between the time from September to February, we had had a pretty much a brand new board back in September. And one of the things that we did was to begin to realize that we had to get our projects out to the public for public review. And that had not been done in the past very well. So we created a community outreach committee, and we said when projects that appear to be controversial are going to come before us, we want to present them to the public. So that night, we had a motion to when the project came, we had a motion to go back to the original proposal just as it was before, accept the project with the conditions that we had placed. And we had a 2-9 vote, 2 in favor, 9 against. We had the full board present. So we actually vetoed the project back in February. Then a next motion came before us. One of the members said, well, how about if we asked Sprint to please present a story poll so that the public could see what this thing would look like, and we'd get public input and see whether it was just we who voted against it or if it was the public that didn't want it. So Sprint did that for us, and we had a story poll up for probably about 2 weeks. And then we asked the public through an email to please present their responses via email. In addition, 2 of the LOCAC members polled the public to find out what their answers were. You did receive a summary, the final summary of the results of those surveys before, but I wanted to just summarize again the public vote. There was 31.9% of the public that wanted no tower at all. I was the recipient of the emails, which I then forwarded on to the chairperson of the Land Use Committee who did the summary. So I've read them all. And 45.5% of the emails that came in were not exactly pleased with the project, but would be willing to live with it if it were absolutely minimally visible. Which, by disguising it, by absolutely no flag on it, and et cetera. 23.6% said of the votes that came in from the public said that they did like the tower as planned by Sprint. So I would, just in summary, I would say that most of them, in a way, objected, and a lot of them for health reasons. We then ended up with a tie vote, and all I want to say is only one of the people voting for it voted against it at the second time. It was 5-5 and with 1 abstention. All of the changes, all of the additional negative votes were from people who were absent or people who were new to the board. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions for Carol? Carol, I have a question. Could you mention the survey, how it was conducted?
Yes, the first, there was an email that was that we put out that explained the project.
Allowing the cell tower to go in this location. What I really think it comes down to is this will be precedent setting, and I don't think that we're quite ready to begin opening up all of Los Osos for the proliferation of these cell towers. Several things came up when I heard Mr. Van Buren's explanation. If this tower was already anticipated in his new construction, I wonder why he wasn't able to, as Mr. Rose suggested, put the equipment cabinet closer to the pole so that we could have had a 12-inch pole. Those considerations are the considerations that concern the people of Los Osos that drive by and have a visual impact to deal with every day. And in the case of it possibly becoming a smaller, I think 2 inches is substantial when you're looking at a 50-foot pole. It would have made a huge difference, I think, in the community if we had felt that there was an attempt to make this, as was said, visual plus to the community. It still is visually large, and the idea of having a huge flag on top of it just again brings it as another piece of destroyed visual that we have in that corner. I would really hope that we can set up an ordinance countywide to begin looking at how we are going to deal with the proliferation of these cell towers that can't be established on hills, seem to need to be established in the middle of towns. The safety issues will come up in the future too, and I think that the entire idea of looking at setting up an ordinance would take into consideration health effects as well as the visual for other communities in the county. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Okay, Diane Anderson, did you want to say something? Okay.
Lindy Owen speaking for Diane Anderson. She has a health issue and asked if I would read her letter.
Okay.
As a resident and homeowner of Los Osos, I would like to state my opposition to a cell phone tower in the midst of business and homes in our town. I have owned a cell phone in Los Osos for years and have had excellent coverage provided by the existing towers on Clark Road. I am afraid the installation of this eyesore would lead to a proliferation of other towers in Los Osos. I am also very concerned about the health hazards to the citizens of Los Osos. Diane Anderson.
All right. Thank you. Eric Greening.
I'm Eric Greening, and on the issue of preemption, number one, it is not absolute, and number two, you are not preempted from seeking information on all aspects of this project. In fact, the California Environmental Quality Act requires you to seek such information. If there are significant impacts that you are not allowed to condition or have your decision influenced by, you still have significant impacts. If you can't mitigate them, you are required to require an EIR, and one of the overriding considerations if you end up having to approve the project might very well be preemption if it applies. But you cannot simply pretend ignorance of environmental impacts simply because someone claims something is preempted. A few issues with the impacts of the wave energy. A smaller wavelength is a higher energy. So if this has a significant higher smaller wavelength than the other providers, that means it is a higher degree of energy. Another thing to remember is that the any electromagnetic radiation, visible light or whatever, the intensity increases by the inverse square of the distance. My question then is, compared to pre-existing cell towers around Los Osos, how much closer is it to the nearest residence, the nearest office, the nearest retail, the nearest daycare, the nearest school? the actual impact of the electromagnetic radiation would then be the square of that difference. If it's 10 times closer, you're talking about 100 times the intensity. If it's 100 times closer, you're talking about 10,000 times the intensity. You are required to verify the issues with biological resources before you decide there is an insignificant impact. What research has been done on mollusks and their reaction to this type of radiation, if any? And if none has been done, you cannot be sure that the impact is insignificant.
Antenna, these are not simple antennas. They beam their energy. But we have an RF report which says that at the maximum energy level is 0.17% of the FCC limit.
Do you want to say something,
Madam Chairwoman? If I show a couple of examples here, I think it might help clarify the location and some of the issues on the site. This is the site plan that shows Los Osos Valley Road in the top, and this is South Bay Boulevard Extension. This is the existing building footprint. This that's outlined is where the basement facility that the equipment would go, and over here is where the flagpole would go. Now, that's part of the information that Commissioner Rose was asking, you know, why couldn't it be located closer over here? I don't know what the rest of this area underneath is. Another point I wanted to bring up is it could be located closer. The original location of the project, you know, with a couple of years ago was here in front of the building. And then I'm sure it could be maybe reduced to the 12 inches if it was located in this area because of the distance. But those are just ideas that...
Some alternatives.
But why can't the equipment be located in the basement 20 feet away from the flagpole? I think where you've put the flagpole makes sense now, less visually obtrusive there than it would be against just putting it in front of the building. So tell me why those cabinets can't move around in that storage basement.
That the applicant would be best for that.
All right. We have one last speaker. Why don't we conclude our public hearing, and then we can come back to discussion and talk about this with staff. I have Van Buren, I believe it is.
Yeah, Leon Van Buren, Bonaire Investments, resident of Los Osos since 1974. I think there's some good points here. I think the situation, again, that we have to understand based on the last picture that was illustrated, if you can put that back on the board if you could. Originally, when we were approached by cell companies to put anything at our location, the ideal location for them was going to be in front of the building itself, and that's on the corner of Los Osos Valley Road and South Bay Boulevard, and they were hoping to put three flagpoles there. And at that particular level, you know, we probably could have put in a 12-inch pole or whatever. I think by going through with the engineers, the architects, and just the common sense of trying to do something that's hopefully beneficial to Los Osos, which I know that's a controversial subject in its own right, we try to locate the pole in such a location that it would be screened from sight because it would be more centralized within the development itself, and it would be between the buildings. And the buildings are about 32 feet tall, and this is a 50-foot tall flagpole. There's a lot of controversy. Is it a flagpole? Is it a cell site? Well, primarily, is it a tree or not a tree? It's really a flagpole that is going to be used as a cell site. I think in any development or commercial development or office development, you're allowed to put a flagpole in there. I'm sensitive to the community's concerns. I think we've tried to address that in trying to relocate it in such a location that would be beneficial to the site and the community as a whole. I think to try to go back and try to relocate a vault underneath the existing pole would be almost impossible just because of the fact of the infrastructure of all the different components that are already underneath this particular pole as far as electrical, telephone, gas, electric, you know, to try to move all that stuff out of the way would be almost impossible to do. The only thing we could do is possibly come back and approach you and maybe possibly try to seek a location in front of the building, which I don't think that's going to be beneficial at all. I think at this particular level, the thing we have is we had a situation where we had a 60-foot pole with an 18-inch diameter pole. I mean, 60-foot pole that was 18-inch in diameter, and we've come down to a 50-foot pole that's 14 inches in diameter. Put a flag on it at all, because then that way it won't draw any attention to the particular location, and that might be most pleasing. But whatever the community or you folks suggest, we're willing to, you know, accommodate that to whatever avail.
We're past suggestions. The condition 1F says you got the option of flying different flags, only one flag at a time, and a flag shall be flown during the daytime, period. So that tells me somebody's going to be out there at 8 o'clock in the morning and somebody's going to be out there at sunset.
Correct.
That includes Christmas Day. And, gee, is that logical, or how's that going to happen?
Well, we're a company that's in real estate, so we do 24/7. So we're pretty much there, you know, 7 days a week. So I don't think that's pretty unreasonable at this particular level. So, thank you.
Okay. Now I'm going to go back to my point. Why can't going back? If you could put that site plan up again, why can't we put the equipment cabinet in the basement in that? I guess that would be the easterly corner of that building there, or westerly corner of the building.
When the building was originally designed, the building was not designed to have a basement under it at all, and we had it redesigned to accommodate a basement so we could put our utilities and to hopefully accommodate to put equipment there for any cell site or future cell sites that might be of interest. The situation there is that the property basically has been excavated to, I think it was like 20 some odd feet in height, and it's sloping downward. And during the initial design of the building itself, the area where the equipment is located now, that was probably only about 5 or 6 feet in height, and sloping back up to where the flagpole is, that's only maybe 3 feet. So it would be impossible to excavate the area underneath the existing building where she's pointing to right now to accommodate the actual equipment.
So you're telling me the basement is only 3 foot high in that area?
Probably, well, 24 inches probably.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Would you like to make some concluding remarks before we close the public hearing?
Thank you, Commissioners. Let's see. I just wanted to close in stating that...
State your name, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Tricia Knight with Sprint PCS. In stating that we have gone to great lengths, I believe, to reduce the visual impacts of this project substantially. I do understand that you have a petition with 81 signatures in front of you opposing the project, but Sprint doesn't ever fund an area unless they've received a number of complaints about the lack of coverage in Los Osos, and there are 15,000 residents there. So we don't just randomly go into an area and decide that this is an area that needs to be covered. The customers drive that funding. So that's basically all I wanted to say and answer any last-minute questions that you might have.
Great. Any questions? Okay. No questions. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the Planning Commission for discussion and decision. Commissioner Christie?
Well, I think that staff has done a really good job of justifying the approval of a flagpole at this site. But it, the point was made at the last hearing, and I think it bears being made again, that it's not a flagpole. It's a cell phone tower. And the reason that this is significant is because the LCP has specific policies relating to wireless communication facilities, and the development standards that, you know, should, that are implemented as standards require that the applicant shall pursue placement of facilities in the following preferential order. And the first preference for a cell phone tower would be a side mount antenna on an existing structure when integrated into the existing structure, completely hidden from public view, or painted and blended to match existing structures, which doesn't include the sky, in my opinion. This is clearly a flagpole that's, or a facility that's not attached to the building. It's silhouettes against the sky. And even though it's painted gray, it's going to have a flag on it, which is going to draw your eye to the structure as opposed to minimize its existence and blend into the existing background. The second preferential order for the standards for these types of facilities are within existing signs and blended with within or on existing signage to be completely hidden from public view. Or the third is atop existing structures with appropriate visual architectural screening to be completely hidden from public view or in the downtown community. And it will very likely lead to more applications for additional facilities, not only from Sprint, but from its competitors as well. And these graphics, I think, are very instructional, and I think the dialogue has been very educational as well, because there, as we've heard, there are a lot of extenuating factors that go into determining how large, how wide, and how tall these structures can need to be for technical reasons. And it is not inconceivable that Sprint or a competitor may come forward at some point in the future for something that more closely resembles the Letitia Vineyards 25-inch diameter flagpole. And at that point, we will have already set a precedent by approving an existing structure. So clearly, this is also growth-inducing, which is problematic under the LCP. I think staff has done a good job of justifying the flagpole, but, you know, the LCP policies, when they're applied differently, can lead us to a very different conclusion. And I think in a situation like this, I mean, some of us may say, what's the big deal? It's a flagpole. It's a cell phone tower. I use my cell phone. What's the big deal? But it's not really, that's not really the test here. I mean, the question is, what does the community of Los Osos want? And it seems that the community of Los Osos has spoken pretty clearly and consistently, and that the CSD, which is its own locally elected government, has already rejected two of these towers in other downtown areas. Apparently, they don't have jurisdiction over this one. LOCAC has moved from a position to support to a position of perfect ambivalence in their 5-5 vote. And the emails that we've been receiving have been running, you know, pretty much 20 to 1. I haven't counted up all the emails, but they've been pretty strongly opposed, as is the result of the informal survey that was taken by the LOCAC members. So all things considered, I think that, number one, it doesn't meet the standards for these types of facilities, and I do have some draft findings of denial for the record should the commission wish to go in that direction, since it's required by the ordinance. And I think those findings of denial are also supported by the pretty clearly stated intent of the community. So that's what I've heard today, and that's just what I'd like to say for the record.
Okay. Any other comments by the commission? Commissioner Rappa?
Since I know all of your comments because I watched them all as you debated this issue or discussed this issue on a number of occasions, I think one of the things that you all suggested, and I totally support it, although I don't believe it's possible at this time is some type of an overall plan for the visual impacts. And I would support that, and that's something that I believe as communities grow and become more aware of things that are changing around them, that they will come forward, especially the advisory committees. And I would like to suggest that this is certainly one that the Los Osos Advisory Committee might consider to take up. I think I have a clear understanding of the federal guidelines on health hazards and how this does meet it. One of the things that I would like to see strengthened, whether it goes along with this particular application or another application, is the requirement that should technological advances come, that these facilities be changed, be altered. Because one of the things that we're looking at, and some people may not even be aware of it, when you pay your utility bills, you pay into a program that's undergrounding antiquated poles, PG&E poles, telephone poles, et cetera, et cetera. And I know condition number 4, recommended by the staff, talks to this, but it certainly, to me, could be a lot stronger. The language could be a lot stronger. I guess the other thing that I noted from observing your meeting that you all struggled with this too, and it becomes sort of a personal thing in a way. Do I associate flagpoles with commercial development? Yeah, I do. I also know that communities deal with flagpoles at their entrances to their communities. Certainly the city of San Luis Obispo just went through that. I guess to me it's kind of a vantage who objected to anything on this corner, whether it be the antenna, quote, flagpole, the building, the signage. There was an item before you or after at the last meeting that dealt with a reader board, and there were concerns with that. Change is just very difficult for all of us, especially the older we get, at least for myself. So at this point, and I've struggled with this one, gone by, looked at different flagpoles, and I am familiar. I happen to have a family member who lives very close to the one that's shown in the information submitted by Sprint in Santa Maria. I am in support of the project, but I would like to get staff's input on condition number 4, 3-7, under site development. And the language, that to me that language is a little bit open. The language is, if new technology is developed that reduces the impact of the proposed project, the applicant agrees to install such improvements with 6 months of notification by the county. Do we monitor these types of advances?
Because staff handles different projects all the time, we're continually asking questions and reading to try and keep up with technology. And so when we see how things are changing, we try and adapt that way. So I can just say we try and stay on top of the changes to see if, in fact, a facility is no longer in use. We would definitely, you know.
Oh, I have no problem with the no longer in use. I'm not even talking about the no longer in use. I'm talking about advances that would allow these types of facilities, which now require towers, poles, whichever, to be changed.
Right. As the gentleman, the radio frequency person, had talked about, satellite would be the only thing right now that we can think of in technology where we wouldn't need to have on the ground. One thing we do, when a lot of these projects that are existing now there are three and four carriers on a site. And oftentimes, either more carriers want to come on a site or on that same site or change out facilities because technology does change. They need to change out antennas, equipment, et cetera, et cetera. We are continually, when that happens, trying to get better projects. So we have this built-in system where we try and continually make it better every time we have to do anything on any changes.
So in your opinion, condition number four doesn't need strengthening?
I don't know how to strengthen it. We can discuss it here for a minute and
see. Okay, maybe while some of the analysis.
Let's continue on discussion. I want to make a few comments. I think, first of all, I want to go ahead and respond that I agree with Commissioner Christie, and I don't see this as an issue of that the community is opposed to change. They certainly have gone through a number of changes, probably as many as if not more than many of the communities in San Luis Obispo. What I see this is an issue that of one that is setting the character of the way cell towers are going to look in the future. And I agree with Commissioner Rapa that a master plan is desperately needed for the new cell towers that will be coming. We've already heard the representatives say that they probably will be coming in with other cell towers, and there's no doubt there are going to be other carriers that will be coming in. And we need to, I believe, do a master plan for that community. And I know staff had recommended this several years ago, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate what staff has done, because I think that they have done an excellent job in preparing the staff report. And I think that this is setting the tone. And I don't support it, because I think we need to do the master plan. And I also agree with Commissioner Christie that if we look at the LCP and we look at the findings that have to be made, certainly putting it in a new location, and it's not one of a flagpole, but looking at that, we need to go ahead and possibly look at it as a side-mounted antenna someplace and integrating it with an existing structure. And I don't see this as integrating it with the existing structure. And so, again, it's not a matter of whether it's a flagpole or whether it's an antenna. It's whether or not it meets the criteria of the LCP and whether we can make the findings. And I don't see that we can, that we have evidence here that it doesn't meet the findings. And so I cannot support it. And I just want to go ahead and get that on the record, that I don't think it's an issue of a matter of the community saying we don't want any more change, that I don't see it that.
The thing is visuals, visual, and this is certainly no different. And that's why I think the 2 inches difference in the flagpole would really make quite a bit of difference. The smaller, the better. I don't agree with Commissioner Christie that this is, and I understand her viewpoint. You're looking at this as a cell site first, or a cell tower first, or you're looking at a flagpole first, and whichever way you go leads you to different, drastically different conclusion, and therefore I'm doing my best to try to get this 50-foot-high flagpole as be as skinny a thing as possible, and I'm not convinced we can't do that here. There's room in that basement. I saw the 12-inch diameter tower was 66 feet high, so I think there's room to go to 12 inches here.
We certainly have diverse views on this, don't we? This is, yeah, okay. So where do we go from here? Commissioner Christie?
I'd like to make a motion that the commission deny development plan coastal development permit DRC 2004-00008. Based on the findings that it does not adequately implement the development standards pertaining to wireless communication facilities, that it does not adequately implement the visual and scenic policies numbers 1 and 2 of the LCP that protect visual and scenic resources by requiring view sheds to be preserved and restored and protected, and that it's going to be inconsistent with the character of the immediate neighborhood and contrary to its orderly development, because this will have a growth-inducing effect on the community by the precedential nature of this facility spawning the need for more additional towers elsewhere in the community.
I'll second that for discussion, and then just a point of order for County Council. Do we need to make that a tentative motion and ask staff to come back with?
I think that given the fact they're written in the record, I think the Planning Commission Secretary can take that down. I mean, if you have them in written form, you could give them to her.
I do.
So okay. I don't think it would need to be tentative.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor with revised findings. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Alberto Blanc?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
No.
Commissioner Mouskow?
No.
Commissioner Rappa?
No.
Okay, do we have another motion?
I'll ask the applicant, can you make it 12 inches?
Upon further discussion, we will, in the attempt to accommodate the smaller diameter, it's going to take a little bit of figuring on our part, but yes, the property owner has confirmed that we'll go down to 12 inches.
Okay. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
The other, so I'd like to change condition 1A to make the diameter 12 inches rather than 14. And then condition 1F, the F flag shall be flown during the daytime. I see problems with that, you know. So could this, and I'm just asking the commission in general here, could we change this to if a U.S. flag is flown, it shall only be flown during the daytime? Because maybe they will come up with this Los Osos bear flag and bears are out at night.
Why don't we just change shall to may?
I agree.
Yeah.
That works for me because we have a no exterior lighting, therefore you're not allowed to light the thing. Okay, good idea.
Okay. So we have a request for an amendment to condition 1D or 1A and 1F. Any other changes to the conditions?
And with that, I'll move that we adopt the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with applicable provisions of CEQA, Public Resources Code, and approve the development plan, coastal development permit, DRC 2004-8, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified. And I believe they're pretty simple. We got them.
Okay. We have.
I'll second that.
We have first and second. Any discussion?
Well, I think those two changes to the conditions definitely improve the project, and I'm sure that there are people in Los Osos who will be satisfied and pleased that those changes have taken place. However, I still think we have difficulty making the findings for approval based on the
Welcome back to the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission meeting. Lona, would you introduce the next item, please?
Item number 2 is a hearing to consider a request by Carolyn Sahara for an amendment to the South County Inland Area Plan of the Land Use Element by changing the land use category on an approximately 1.5-acre portion of a 30-acre parcel from agriculture to residential rural. And second, an amendment to the agriculture and open space element land use map by changing the land use designation from agriculture to small lot rural. The site is in the South County Inland Planning Area, county file number G030009F, Supervisorial District 4, Brian Pedrotti, project manager.
Before we have a staff report, we have a
Madam Chair, I could have potentially have a conflict of interest on this one, so I must step down.
Okay, thank you. Brian?
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. Brian Pedrotti, staff planner. As stated, this is a request for a general plan amendment to the South County Inland Area Plan of the land use element by changing the land use category on a 1.5-acre portion of a 30-acre parent parcel from ag to residential rural, and an amendment to the agricultural and open space element land use map, changing the land use designation from agriculture to large lot rural, and an amendment to Title 22, Section 22.112020F, to add planning area standards relative to future subdivisions. The property is located on the east side of Highway 101, approximately 1,400 feet north of the Los Barros-Thompson Road interchange with Highway 101. It is a 1.5-acre site in the agricultural land use category. The remainder of the 30-acre parent parcel is in the residential rural land use category. The land use category boundary was drawn in the original map, 1980, and it was quite general. It appears the intention was to follow the topography and the soils, but in this area, the property is actually, or the property line actually follows the topography and soils line more closely than does the line on the map. There is existing row crop to the northwest, rural residences to the northeast and south, and to the west is Highway 101. This is just a closer view of the property. It includes oak woodlands and grasses. And this shows the property with, in general, the area that would be rezoned from agricultural to residential rural. The major issues are the conversion of the agricultural land to residential rural, conflicts with adjacent agricultural operations, and requirements for future subdivisions. As far as conversion of agricultural to residential rural, we did receive comments from the Agricultural Department indicating that there's a limited amount of Class 2 soil which restricts its feasibility as productive ag land. And additionally, the existing parcel configuration restricts that as well. The adjacent agricultural operations, there's a significant irrigated row crop to the northwest. The Ag Department had recommended ag buffers and right-to-farm disclosures. And there are requirements for future subdivisions, including planning area standards that address noise, architecture, agricultural buffers, and wastewater. And additional mitigation for future land divisions is included for oak trees and landscaping in a comprehensive botanical survey. Staff has recommended adopting the negative declaration in accordance with CEQA and adopting the resolution. I'm recommending to the Board of Supervisors approval of the amendment as shown in Exhibits GO3009M, A, and B, and on the findings in the staff report. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Any questions for staff? Commissioner Rose?
Sure. I'm looking on the environmental determination on page 228, and this is under the transportation and circulation.
Designated residential rural, that acre and a half itself is not in compliance with the general plan, and thus the need for this general plan amendment.
All right. On the same area, the next page, under mitigations and conclusions, mitigating the impacts, it said that the applicant will be required to provide a planning area standard stating that secondary access will be required for future land division applications. I couldn't find that. Where did we capture that?
That was not included as that's an oversight. That was not included as mitigation. There is a mitigation under hazards that requires the applicant to comply with all necessary requirements of CDF for the project site, but it was not included as a planning area standard.
So can you whip one up for us?
Excuse me?
Can you make one?
Yes, okay. Certainly.
Okay. Then the next question is in the water area. Is this in the Napomo Mesa? Is this part of the water area? I know the board had some hearing items on this last Tuesday or this Tuesday. And how does that level two, recommended level three, how does all that fit into this application?
Well, the board on Tuesday did not change the level of severity, so it remains at level two, and they did direct staff to do some follow-up actions, but the level of severity has stayed the same. So this negative declaration reflects that there's no change in that.
Okay, so if we approve this thing, isn't that going to increase water use on the mesa, or is this considered to be outside of that area? I looked at my Papadopoulos map, and I had a little hard time trying to figure out where it really fit.
You know, I'm not certain of that. We can ask someone from the environmental division to come down and let us know. You're right, though. It's right on the edge, and I'm not certain it is. It may be on the edge of the plate, as we call it.
Okay, and the last question was, did the services district have an opinion on this?
They were not referred the project, I don't believe, because this is outside of their service area and outside of their sphere.
True, but it's in the water and the mesa issue, and supplemental water and all those things come to mind.
We could put in a planning area standard that would require referral at the time of subdivision. That would be the time that conditions could be applied to the subdivision that could reflect supplemental water. I don't know that they would have automatically gotten a referral, which is why I'm suggesting that we would have to add it as a planning area standard, because again, it's outside the service area and outside the sphere.
Any other questions? Commissioner Christie?
Brian, you mentioned that the Ag Commissioner had recommended ag buffers for the remainder of the site. Is that correct, or is it just for this 1.5-acre strip?
The Ag Department had recommended buffers of 300 to 500 feet, or I think it was 200 or 300 to 500 feet, in that range.
Can you show us on the overhead where those buffers would be located, or was that in the staff report and I...
No diagram was put together for that.
Can you just really indicate where those might be?
The existing agriculture row crop goes right along here. Right.
So it would be, there'd be a 300 to 500 foot ag buffer just along that one property line, basically.
Correct.
Okay. And then I had another question. On page 222, the mitigation for the biological resources, it says the applicants agreed to conduct a comprehensive biological survey report. Is that at the time of the subdivision of the parent parcel, or is that in conjunction with our ostensible approval of this particular request?
That would be at the time of land division application.
Okay. And so they've agreed to full avoidance of any construction grading or vegetation removal activities where resources are found, which include post live oaks?
Yes. It would be any sensitive species identified in the botanical survey.
Right, which says including red-legged frogs, rare plants, and coast live oaks. So I think that's great.
That will determine what future mitigation will be, and that they have agreed that there will be full avoidance of whatever the mitigation is, whatever it is. That means that they don't disturb the site, and if that means that they don't disturb the site, they don't take out one tree, potentially, if there's a new report that comes out, means that they can't build any place on that site, then they don't disturb anything on that site. Is that correct? Is that correct?
Yes.
That is correct. Okay.
Give John and I a chance to look at the specifics here, and then we'll respond. Cammie, do you have something to say in the meantime?
Yeah.
I'm John Nall, by the way, your principal environmental specialist.
All right.
And I think that's a terrific mitigation, by the way.
Well, I think I'm not. The question I have then is to legal staff, because then I have a question about the legality of that requirement. Number one, you're then requiring future mitigation, and number two, which I don't believe you can do that. You have to go ahead and identify. You're putting it off under CEQA, which I'm not sure you can do that under court case Sumstrom versus Mendocino, number one. Number two, if you are then having the applicant agree that they absolutely cannot do anything, the question I have then, are we then setting it up for a takings issue, because you are then approving something and then having them agree, saying if we find out that there's no problem, you can absolutely not do anything to your property?
Well, I just have to say, I think that's unlikely, because I think there will be some economic use of that property that will be allowable and would avoid all impacts to sensitive species. It's just that it probably will not be, you know, maximum development at the minimum parcel size that they could potentially subdivide the property to under the zoning.
What I'm saying is that I don't think I have objection to it. If there needs to be a biological study, it should be done at this stage and not in the future. We need to determine what the problems are now.
Okay.
And I don't believe that we can do this and indicate that there in some that we know that there's a potential problem there for red-legged frogs or some other species, and we're going to mitigate that in the future. That's what I'm saying. And so I'm asking, and I'm sorry, maybe the staff can come back to that, and then I'll ask legal counsel to address that.
Chairman Liberto Blanc, I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. I guess the first point that you've raised about the Sunstrom case is it's certainly an issue that we have to deal with all the time, and that is whether the mitigation that we're developing for a project is real mitigation, or whether it simply requires a study that will come up with mitigation and we don't know what it will come up with. In this case, if it were true that there was mitigation that required complete avoidance, I think that that would fall within the bounds of the Sunstrom case, because it would provide a standard by which you could measure what the mitigation would be. Obviously, full avoidance means full avoidance, and if that were indeed the mitigation measure, and if it were implemented on this approval, I think you wouldn't have to worry about a Sunstrom problem for that reason. I don't see it, though. I looked at the planning area standards. In your staff report on page 2-8, there's a graphic depiction of the area that the planning area standards are going to be imposed upon, and it seems to be a much smaller parcel than the larger ownership that is represented by the graphic on the screen above. And also, when I look at the planning area standards on page 2-9 and 2-10, I don't see in particular the one that you've been referring to. So I don't know as to whether or not it's been carried over from the negative declaration to the general plan amendment.
So are you saying the negative declaration or the initial study is incorrect?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is it's important that if you are relying upon a mitigation measure in the negative declaration to approve the amendment to the land use ordinance and the general plan, then you need to determine that those things are going to be able to be implemented.
Yeah.
And the way that we implement them in our county is by creating planning area standards for those particular pieces of property that actually become part of our general plan land use element. And I don't see the mitigation measures converted into standards, and the standards that do exist would only apply to the smaller piece, not the larger one.
So, Mr. McNulty, I just to be very clear, what you're saying is that the mitigation about avoidance of sensitive species, as it's currently written, applies only to the 1.5 acre, the shaded area, not the parent parcel.
Well, more than that, even I don't see how it applies to the 1.5 acre
area.
Well,
if we put it in the language of the amendment itself, it would only apply to the 1.5 acres.
Well, as you can, if you take a look at page 2-9,
right,
you can see that paragraph 13 refers to this property by name, the Sahara property, and says the following standards apply only to the
in that area. And so it's on that point that, of course, we agree with Mr. McNulty that we don't believe that this is a Sunstrom issue. I do agree that this needs to be a planning area standard.
Did the biological screening report that was prepared, did it identify, and you do have some special status species that were identified on the site?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Were any of those sensitive species identified on the site identified on the area that we're looking at, the 1.58?
I don't exactly know the answer to that without a little more study, but what we're talking about here is a timing issue in that the plant species couldn't be identified because of the time of year. That's why this particular survey is being put off. It's a timing issue.
Okay.
So we, Environmental Division staff doesn't feel that there's a problem here, but we agree that the only way we can be aware of this in the future is to put a planning area standard on here so that we know we can track that. And if we don't have one on there, do we, Brian?
Not for the comprehensive.
Okay, so we can certainly come up with something like that.
Yeah, so you don't have an area planning standard for it, so we'll come up with one for it, though, even though it's in the initial study.
I'm going to look to Cammie because she...
We have an ongoing issue with how much of a negative declaration is pulled forward as planning area standards. Oftentimes... the kinds of things that come forward as mitigations really apply to whatever subsequently is going to happen to that property and not actually the changing of the land use category itself. So it's always a pick and choose on the part of staff what we feel actually applies to the change of the category itself and what would subsequently apply to a land division. If a land division comes in on this property, we would go back to this negative declaration as both information and potentially to even use the negative declaration for the subdivision. So it's not going to disappear forever and never be looked at again. The initial study and the negative declaration would be used on subsequent projects on this site. However, there's not a problem at all in adding a planning area standard, and I'd actually recommend that if your commission's interested in doing that, that the planning area standard just simply say that the tentative maps show building sites that avoid. Now, they would, in order to do that, they're going to have to do the survey to find out where it is to be able to designate the building sites that avoid. But I think that that's a cleaner planning area standard.
See, the concern I have is that we have one applicant now that's saying that they agree to one thing. They could sell the property, and someone new could come in and say, I didn't agree to that. You know, I've never agreed to that, and therefore we end up with a potential problem in the future. And so it seems, you know, and if we don't identify it someplace so that somebody new knows about it, I think we have a potential conflict in the future. I don't know how the other commissioners feel, but I think that this is an issue. So,
I would absolutely agree, and I think by making it generic is probably not the right word, but by making it part of the standards, it applies to whomever right. ends up developing this property, or if they do.
Right.
I just have a question about how much sense it makes to apply these mitigations to just that 1.5-acre portion of the property, since by virtue of our action, we're going to be making this one, you know, homogeneously zoned parcel that will function as a single unit when it comes before us for subdivision, you know, to just carve out the little 1.5 acre of Class 2 soils, which everybody in this that's commented on the staff report seems to agree is kind of inconsequential from an agricultural standpoint. It might make more sense to make those standards apply to the whole parcel rather than just the 1.5 acres. Does staff have any feeling about that?
We do have, in addition to the standards that will apply to this particular piece, We have other land division application. I guess some of them will apply as a way by default because of the overall land division of the entire 30-acre piece. At the same time, there are additional mitigations that apply because of Highway 101 setbacks and things that will overlap with the ag buffers and things like that. So I guess at this time we've designated that all the planning area standards apply to that piece, and that some of those will by default apply to the whole parcel based on when the new land division application comes in.
But it just seems if we're requiring this mitigation in order to meet the requirements of CEQA to mitigate the impacts to biological resources, the biological resources are spread throughout the site. They're not just confined to the 1.5 acres. So if we, from an analytical perspective, have to come to the conclusion that biological resources won't be impacted because we're requiring the applicant to avoid impacts to sensitive species during construction or grading or vegetation removal, if that's what we need to do to meet our statutory obligations under CEQA,
certainly it's within your discretion as the Planning Commission to change that figure that's on page 2-10 to incorporate
the whole site
and have whatever you end up recommending to the board apply to the whole site. It doesn't change that there's also going to be those overlaps of what Brian just read into the record, and perhaps even additional things that come up when the initial study is done for the subdivision.
Yeah. And that brings me to the second question that I had or connection I'm trying to make on page 235. This is pertaining to what the applicant will have to do at the time of the subsequent land division. At the time of land division application, the applicant shall submit a comprehensive botanical survey report prepared by a county-approved biologist, et cetera, et cetera. And there's not mention in that mitigation of consideration of wildlife species. It's purely focused on the botanical report. So do we need to include wildlife species or report that also includes wildlife species, or is that covered elsewhere? Or should we be specific in that?
I am assuming the reason that it's specific to botanical is because that's what showed up on our mapping as being the potential for impacts.
Kimmy, I'll jump in right here.
Feel free.
There's the potential for red-legged frog.
Right.
And so, Commissioner Christie, you're correct. Staff is of the opinion that we should change that from botanical to biological surveys.
That would be great.
Thank you. Yes.
Any other questions for staff? Commissioner Rose?
One minor correction here on page 29 where we're defining the property. I double-checked with Richard, and this is not at the intersection of Willow Road and Guadalupe Road.
Correct. We'll change the location. That's incorrect.
Okay, you going to give us the right one?
Yes. The location is located on page 2-1 under subject heading. The site is located on the east side of Highway 101, approximately 1,400 feet north of the Los Barros-Thompson Road Highway interchange.
Brian, I have a question about, could you put up the land use designation map and the location of the project? Just let me get a feel for the surrounding land use designations.
The land use designation map, or?
Right. That's perfect. That's good. So the adjacent property is agriculture. Could you just point out for me?
Sure.
Where the RR property is?
This is the parent parcel.
Right.
RR is all of the yellow area, and ag land use category is all of the green area. And so this section here You can see this kind of thick, dark line is the map line between the land use designation, between the ag and the RR.
So most of the property is designated RR?
Correct.
Okay, and so a portion of it will remain agriculture, or is it just this small portion that's agriculture?
This is the portion that's agriculture, which will, if this general plan amendment is approved, would change to RR, creating or putting the whole parcel into residential rural.
So the entire parcel would then be RR. It's only that small portion that's agriculture.
Yes.
So the entire parcel then would be RR, making it consistent.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
One more question, Mr. Pedretti. When was the South County Area Plan last updated? Do we know that?
1996.
So about 10 years. Thank you.
Oh, pardon me. No. 1994.
Okay.
Any other questions for staff before we open the public hearing? Cammie?
Just to clarify, we did get the map, and this does appear to be outside of the Napomo Mesa area, this particular parcel. We're going to try and project it on the screen if we can find a key to unlock. No? At some point, we'll project it on the screen.
Okay.
Or I can do Carol Merrill.
Seeing no, does staff have any other comments? Okay, seeing no other questions from the Planning Commission, we'll open the public hearing and ask the applicant to come forward. Please state your name for the record.
Hello, my name's Kay. In regards to satisfying all of the county fire department requirements. We've submitted to the county extensive reports so far just for this general plan amendment. And we feel that this process is a little unfortunate because historically this property has never been used for ag. And we just ask that the commission approve our request, please.
Thank you. Any questions? Commissioner Rose?
Right, back to this. So you're saying that through your conversations with CDF, if you make your cul-de-sac short enough, you won't have to provide any secondary access? Where is access now? Could you show me on a map how you would... I wanted to go look at this site, but I was convinced, one, it wasn't at this Willow and Guadalupe Road, and...
Brian, do we have a map that we could put up?
And I couldn't see if there was any roads to get to the thing.
If you don't mind the wrongness of it.
They'll give you a pointer.
This is Highway 1 here.
You got to be on the microphone.
Sorry.
And you get this fancy pointer.
This is Highway 101 here. This is going to be Los Barrios Thompson. And you can see where current cul-de-sac exists right here. And then there's a little easement access that goes there.
So that's an easement?
Uh-huh.
And about how long would that be?
Right up to about here is a half a mile. Well, actually, no, more down here. And this easement is used by the agriculture land here, which also has rural residential out here. And so our neighbors access through our property. And one of the good things about doing a development here is it'll improve that road. One of the things that we were planning on doing was, right through here, it's fairly steep. And if there was ever fire to occur out here, the fire department currently has a very difficult time accessing these properties because of the nature of this, the terrain and how steep that access road is. So when we come in with our subdivision map, we're going to be required to improve that road, which will make it a little safer.
And does your family own or control that access?
Yes, our land is subsidiary to all this. And yes, we do own that.
Oh, but the parcel to the right?
Correct.
Of yours?
What we've done in
that you
the past,
said is steep.
Yes, we do own that. What we've done in the past to help pay for some of our building is we sold off everything around here. And so the back portion, what our family owns, is all here.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one person that submitted a request to speak for him, Eric.
I'm Eric Greening, and this is a very confusing situation because supposedly we're looking only at the biological resources on the parcel where the zone change is taking place, but it is to allow the breaking down of the larger totality into 5-acre parcels, and it's not clear, number one, whether any part of the parcel at stake right now would be developable anyway, because wouldn't it be within the agricultural buffer? The Ag Department recommendation was kind of hard to read because it could be anywhere from 200 to 500 feet, but I would tend to think it would be at the larger dimension simply because the prevailing wind in this area is from the northwest, and so that would seem to call for the largest feasible buffer under the circumstances, and particularly since the intensive operation goes right up to the property line without any kind of buffering, not even a hedgerow on the ag parcel size. But if we're going to look at the future development of 6 5-acre parcels, how would they be developable without impacting the drip line of any trees or any of the other biological resources, some of which may be in the grasslands? We're talking about building envelopes, and then we're also talking about the surrounding area of fire clearances, and particularly on steep slopes, those would be fairly extensive. And while it's true mature oak trees don't have to be cleared, certainly many performing parts of the ecosystem, including the cover, which is used by animals, do end up getting cleared in the fire clearances. There's no analysis at this time to anticipate any of that, although the project in front of you can be predicted to bring about those impacts.
More likely. There is some structures for Cal Waters, and no piping is above ground, but there is some structures on an adjacent parcel, not on this one in question. And we did come up to some agreements for them to access our other land, but we don't need to do anything with them in regards to this. I just stand by the statements I made earlier, and once again, we just feel unfortunate that we have to go through this process, but we understand that there's a concern to protect the environment on this, and we will do anything that we possibly can to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No questions. I'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the Planning Commission for discussion and decision. Commissioner Rose?
Well, Richard, you're not the fire department, but you get to deal with them. The concern about the secondary access, the applicant said that perhaps if the cul-de-sac was made short enough, and do you see that as feasible?
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I see it as feasible. We haven't been presented any specific design that I've reviewed, but it certainly sounds like it's within reach.
Commissioner Christie?
The applicant stated that they're not looking for 6 5-acre parcels out of this site, that they're looking for probably 4. So I'm wondering about potentially adding that as a condition or a planning area standard, that this site can't be subdivided beyond 4. What would that be, 7-point parcels or something?
We are working with an engineer. 4 to 5 is what we're looking at. The difference between probably 4 or 5 is fitting within the slope grade for each of the parcel size, but I can guarantee there will be no more than 5. Once again, I said 4 seems more likely, but if we can get 5, I wouldn't ask to be limited to only 4. if five is feasible. But we will be probably heavily monitored by the county in regards to fitting within what we should be allowed to do on our property.
Well, the concern about this site, obviously, is its biological resources.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing today, this seemingly insignificant step about rezoning 1.5 acres, is actually setting up... You can sit down, by the way. Thank you for your comments. Is actually setting up a two-step process to convert what looks like a pretty healthy... mixed oak woodland with potential endangered species and some already identified sensitive and threatened species on it for the kind of low-density residential development that we have so often agreed is a problematic growth pattern for this county and not the kind of development that we really need to be encouraging. It's unfortunate that the majority of the site is already zoned rural residential, but with the last update of the area plan being over 10 years ago, it may be that it's time to take another look at this area and see what kind of zoning may make more sense in terms of preserving these resources in the long term. So, I mean, I'm just sort of kicking that around. I'm not... I haven't come to any conclusions there, but I just think it's important that the applicant understand that, you know, the applicant has a right to go through the process of requesting this amendment, but it's a purely discretionary act on the part of this commission that should be based on the needs of the community and the specifics of the site and not entirely on just the desires of the applicant. So it may be that a four parcel split makes more sense when all the other factors are taken into consideration. I'm just throwing that out there.
As a follow-up, Brian, I have a question. How many structures can be approved on each lot? And what type of structures?
There can be a primary residence, a secondary residence, and additional accessory structures.
Okay, so you can have three structures on each lot. Is that correct?
Well, technically, you might even be able to have more than that. You could build, for instance, a barn structure that's small enough that it wouldn't qualify to need a building permit.
I guess I would prefer that we limit our approvals, if they are to come, to the property that's at hand, which is the 1.5-acre parcel. I do agree, and I hope staff has been able to come up with some amended wording for some the standards. I'd be interested in hearing that, if that's available.
Madam Chair, we do have revised wording.
Okay.
The intro description.
Can you refer to a page, please?
2-9.
Okay.
So after figure 112-36, you delete the rest of that sentence and replace it with located 1,400 feet north of the Los Barros Thompson Road Highway interchange. 13A1 would be replaced with a new A1 that would read, at the time of land division application, building sites shall be shown on the tentative map. The building sites shall, 1, avoid any sensitive and special status plant and animal species, 2, be located in the least visible portions of the site, and 3, be outside of the 60 dBA or less area. And then if you're interested, you could add a new planning area standard relative to access being consistent with CDF requirements. It's going to happen anyway, but...
Let's not make too many rules saying the same thing.
I'd like to make another suggestion, if I could, in response to Mr. Greening's comments on 13A3. Rather than a range of 200 to 500 feet... simply specify 500 feet, incorporate agricultural buffers of 500 feet.
But the ag commissioner, who's usually rather conservative, came up with this 200 to 500 feet. Why should we?
Well, they're giving us a range, and we're taking that into advisement and coming up with conclusions.
But with 500 may preclude, that may be where the least environmentally sensitive building spot is. In other words, we're trying to protect the resources, and I don't know, let's go out and check, see what's all there, and we might find a best building site is within 400 feet of that ag property. And so, therefore, I would prefer at that time we would look at whatever crops and prevailing winds and vegetation exists, and again, let our normal ag commissioner process go forward. When he sees the map and he has all of the information, like where all the little critters are and where all the hazards to people from ag operations are, then we'll, at that point, make that decision.
Looking at the map, it looks like that's a pretty heavily wooded area all along that property line. And so I can't visually see from here that there would be what looks like a suitable building site anyway. And so what we're probably looking at is limiting the construction of barns and accessory facilities within that ag buffer area.
Why don't we see where we are? Is there some place in between that we can agree to? I mean, is there agreement to go 500 feet? Commissioner Rappa?
No.
Okay. And I would agree to go 500 feet. So it looks like we have a 2-2 here. All right. So we're not going to go anyplace with the 500 feet. All right. So is an agreement to keep it at 200 to 500 feet? Commissioner Rappa?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Okay, and I would agree to go ahead and maybe pump it up a little bit. So is there some place in between that we can go?
Give me your number.
Okay.
And is this good? One of the reasons I'm concerned is that we're going to go past the 1.5 acre. We're making rules for the residential rural area.
Well, I believe but there's the larger parcel here that we're looking at. Brian, do you have a suggestion?
Well, the Ag Department, they stated that the buffer ranges for irrigated row crops range from 200 to 500. Agricultural buffers and other mitigation measures will be determined by the Ag Department before any subdivision or future development of the parent parcel occurs. So when they do apply for a land division application, at that time the Ag Department would determine, based on all of the factors, the wind, you know, the topography, all the factors they consider, to determine what the boundary buffer would be for that overall parent parcel, which would include the 1.5 acre section here.
Which would include that. So that's going to be the entire parcel.
It may overlap that. It may.
And this is a general plan amendment. I mean, this is a purely 100% discretionary action on our part. And it's up to us to make the conclusion about whether or not we think, you know, a potential, you know, 5-acre parcel subdivision coming forward on this parcel in the future is a good idea or not. And so I would really embrace our ability to take the maximum amount of flexibility that we possess and condition this project in a way that, in our professional judgment, we think will result in the best possible application coming forward in the future. If we can give some pretty direct guidance now at the general plan amendment level, we won't be faced with a project down the road that, you know, comes to us in a way that we're less than happy with.
Well, to move this along, let's go ahead. We have a 2-2 on the 200 to 500 foot, so let's move it along. Is there a range that we can come up with? I'm going to go ahead and throw something out. 250 to 500 feet. Do we have an agreement on that?
Sure, I'll support that.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay, so 250 to 500 feet. How's that?
Yeah, I was actually talking about limiting it to a four-way split, whatever that maximum parcel size works out to.
And I wasn't going to support that. I'm going to, again, let the land use regulations we have about slopes and what dictate that.
Okay. I think we have discretionary approval in the future, and I think we can look at it at that time.
But
Yeah. Isn't it under the Subdivision Map Act, if they come forward with a six-parcel subdivision, we don't have the ability to approve a five-unit or a four-unit?
We can deny it. But
right, but
yeah,
we can't scale it back.
No, we can't, but we can go ahead and deny it if we feel that there are reasons for it.
But we could, at the general plan amendment stage, make that a requirement.
You could limit it. Cami, Brian, you could go ahead, but Commissioner Christie's right. You could go ahead and limit it at this stage. Is that correct?
That's correct. You could either limit it through saying the 30-some-odd acre site is limited to X number of parcels. You could do it through establishing a density. One lot per X number of acres.
Per parcel.
Yeah, you can. There's a number of options for your commission.
I guess I'm more concerned about the number of structures that are on the site. I mean, you could limit it to, you know, just one or two, and if you have a number of structures, I'm more concerned about the number of structures than I am about the number of lots per se, because you could.
We can do both.
Well,
but you,
I think at some point that's...
Do yeah. you have the ability during the subdivision review to limit the number of structures?
Mm-hmm. That's true. You do. I mean, that's more of my concern, is about limiting the number of structures.
Along those lines, Madam Chair, I actually would suggest, to the language that I read in about the building sites at the time of land division, that to be specific and just say all development shall be located within the building sites, that's going to also potentially limit the number of structures that can happen if
right.
you've only got a small area, because that's the area that's outside of the sensitive or special status plan and animal species, outside the visible portions and outside of the 60 dB. If you've only got 6,000 square feet, that's going to limit
right.
very much what you're going to put in there.
Yeah, and I would feel comfortable with that, and at that time possibly limit the number of structures. I don't know how the other commissioners feel about that. I don't know. Sarah?
I honestly think we should do it now. We've got the most discretion now. We've got the ability to do it now. It makes staff's job easier, because they don't have to negotiate the plan when it comes forward, because it's clear where the direction needs to go. I think it makes sense to do it now.
Commissioner Rose?
I'd go for five, but not four.
Okay, I could support five. Commissioner Rappa?
That's fine.
All right, five.
Maximum of five.
Okay.
And that goes on with 13A1? That's part of that, and there'll be a D on it, or...
Yeah, we could do it that way.
Okay.
And I think it's important to note that that's a maximum of five, since the applicant himself has said we're talking four or five. So, you know, we don't want to be hemmed in by that.
I have one more question, Madam Chairperson.
Yes.
During our discussion, we talked about biological resources,
yes.
and I think we talked about adding that as an into the area standards.
Yes.
Is that correct? Does staff have wording and where you would like to apply it?
I'm sorry, I was looking for something else. Could you repeat your question?
It deals with biological resources, and we had discussed the appropriateness of adding it into 13.
That dealing
235?
It is, and it's part of the mitigation summary table.
Right.
Do a biological survey, and I'm hoping that maybe we can word that in there, that so it's clear when they come in, they read it, they know what they have to do.
Cami? We can add through the preparation of a
right.
comprehensive
mm-hmm. yeah.
That's a good point.
Biological survey. Back to that page 2-5,
yeah, I
did find another
I was
spot.
Just going to say, Cami, thank you for pointing that out. Down there at the bottom of 2-35BR-1, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down, special status plant species should be special status plant or animal species. And that would be all the changes to that one.
Okay. Any other changes that we have? Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, I was unclear about the preambulatory language there in 13 after the word Sahara property. Is the
It would say
is the exhibit going to change to include the 30-acre parcel, or is it still going to be limited to the 1.5-acre parcel?
I don't think the commission has provided direction on that.
Let's stay with the acre and a half we're dealing with.
Well, I think it makes sense to deal. I mean,
if you stay with the acre and a half, then the limitation for five parcels is kind of odd.
Right. That's right. So I would recommend that we include the 30 acres, the entire site.
So do we do that by changing the figure 112-36?
That's exactly how you
write it.
So what should we? Which figure should we refer to it?
You would just refer that the figure 112-36 would show the entire parcel in this ownership.
What's that figure again, Ms. Griffin?
112-36.
That's what it says now, though, and I thought that only applied to the 1.5 acres.
No, we'd actually just modify that figure to make it apply to the bigger.
Oh, okay.
So you'd make it match what's on the screen right now?
Would be amended.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So then we would have to show that as amended. Okay. Okay. Any other changes that we have? Or any other direction that you need staff from commission?
I guess I'm just a little dull today. Is there a figure that's in the report that we can actually make that change to?
Right here.
So what is that, 112-36?
It's exhibit, make a change to that one, Ryan?
Exhibit G03009MA. Basically, exhibit A.
Yeah. Showing an exhibit.
Which is on page 2-8.
Okay.
So that's how it will read.
Okay.
Thank you.
Brian, there would need to be a change to the companion exhibit in Exhibit B, too. The actual figure 112-36. So you need to make the change on 2-8 and 2-10.
On page 2-10, figure 112-36 as well.
Okay. Any other changes we need to make?
And I would go back for a second. On the figure on 2-8, is actually the general plan amendment. So my understanding is that would not change. That should stay the same. It would be the figure on page 2-10 that would actually change.
Right. It's just 2-10. That figure would change, but not figure 2-8.
Correct.
That would remain the same.
Because that
right.
extra property is already RR.
Right. Okay. Okay. Are we ready for a motion?
Madam Chair, would you like staff to read into the record the changes so that your motion can just reflect what
please,
got
please
into the record?
That'd be great. Thank
okay. you. Okay. The introduction would read 13 Sahara property. The following standards apply only to land shown in figure 112-36, located 1,400 feet north of the Los Barros / Thompson Road Highway interchange. I would actually recommend a new 13A1 that would read any subdivision of the parcel as shown in figure 112-36 shall be no more than a maximum of five parcels. Then a new 13A2, at the time of land division application, building sites shall be shown on the tentative map. The building sites shall, I think it's A, avoid any sensitive and special status plant and animal species through the preparation of a comprehensive botanical or biological, let me get the right words. A comprehensive biological survey per A, B, and C, it would say all development shall be located within the building sites.
Okay. And, Cammie, we need to clarify that on page 2-10, figure 112-36, okay, that in the introduction in 13, that these standards apply to that figure, and that figure is going to be enlarged to show the entire parcel? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so we need to go ahead and get that into the record, that that figure is going to be amended to show that that's going to be enlarged so that those standards apply to the entire site, and that on page 2-8, that exhibit remains the same because this shows the area where there's going to be a change from agriculture to residential rural.
That's correct.
Okay.
So it would.
Okay.
That's my scribbled revision to the exhibit.
Okay, very good. All right. Any corrections or any clarifications by the commission?
Is it important that we define this as a mitigated negative declaration? Because I notice we're referring to it as a negative declaration, when in fact it is a mitigated one. That change goes in Section 2. On page 2-10, the Section 2, it talks about a proposed negative declaration when, in fact, it's a proposed mitigated negative declaration. And with all that, I have a motion.
Very good.
Ready to entertain that, Madam Chair?
Yes. Yes, sir.
I'll move that we recommend to the Board of Supervisors adoption of the mitigated negative declaration in accordance to applicable provisions of CEQA and Public Resources Code, approval of this general plan amendment as shown in the attached exhibits G030009M:A, B, and C, based on the recommended findings in this report, and noting that on B, the was changed according to the changes Ms. Griffin read into the record.
Okay, I have a first, do I have a second? First, second, any discussion? No discussion, roll call, please.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Rappa?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Aye.
Chairperson Liberta Blanc?
Yes. With that, we're going to break for lunch, unless the commission has any opposition to that. Okay, we'll come back at 1:30.